making good. I'm Renee Blanchard, founder and operator of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery, located here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Church Alley is a people-first, mission-driven small business that I opened in 2013. And the best part about owning a cafe is the people. So in this podcast, I interview the makers, the farmers, and the many interesting people I've met through the shops, the folks doing the good work here in Louisiana and all along the Gulf Coast. Let's get started.
Hi, I'm Emily McElrath. I am a doctor of physical therapy. I own Pivotal PT and Wellness. It is a concierge orthopedic physical therapy clinic and a brick and mortar pelvic health and orthopedic physical therapy clinic. We offer services both on the South Shore and the North Shore. That's my story. I kind of blend orthopedic health and pelvic health in the PT world, and I love doing that. I'm very passionate about that. And here I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for being here, Emily. So you're my PT and you have been for years now, probably 3 years, I think. And so I originally came to you because I was having like real mobility issues and lower back issues and a lot of pain. I know customers know, and my staff knows that I would be doing cleaning up or something like that, and I would just get stuck. I would basically have spasms and be stuck in one position, usually bent over.
Yes, I remember that. It seems like a long time ago, but I remember that when you were that significantly involved. So
Yeah. And so we kind of worked through a lot of stuff. And what I didn't know is that I have a tear in my hip, and that's something it took a long time for me to kind of realize through a lot of work. And I was going
interestingly to- enough too, I feel like that's a diagnosis that it's not uncommon for it to take a while to diagnose because it mimics other diagnoses, right? So a lot of times the kind of tear that Renee has for listeners is called a labral tear of the hip. So it's basically a small tear in the lining of the socket of the hip joint. And it can be very, very, very painful, but it can also produce kind of vague symptoms. Like it might feel like back pain or hip pain or a combination of those things, or sometimes it's catchy, sometimes it's achy in nature. So I feel like that is a diagnosis that takes a while to get because oftentimes it gets misdiagnosed as back pain or muscle spasm or, you know, things like that, just hip tendonitis or hip bursitis or things like that. So it's not uncommon how you're saying, like, it took a while for me to figure that out. That's actually not an uncommon thing with that diagnosis.
Yeah, it took, I mean, I went to many PTs before you and I went to the Ochsner Back Clinic and I literally had no progress over 3 months of going to the back clinic, and they were all very good PTs. Like I know them personally too, and like that they've helped a lot of people. They were like, I don't know why you've had no progress in the last 3 months, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I actually just went to y'all for pelvic floor because I didn't know anything else to do. And I was like, well, I'm just going to go to a different PT type that I've never heard of. And so I don't know.
Yeah. And actually, I don't know if I've ever told you this, maybe I have, but that diagnosis, hip labral tears, is actually part of what got me into pelvic health. So part of what got me into pelvic health was my own birth experience. But another big part was that I had been an orthopedic therapist for almost 10 years when I kind of shifted gears and went to pelvic health. And I had been seeing all these patients who either had hip labral tears or had had labral repairs. So that's a surgery to fix the tear. And their range of motion was better and their mobility was better, but their pain was still the same. And I remember being like, God, we are missing something. I am missing something. There's got to be a reason why all these people are continuing to have pain. And lo and behold, there's been a lot of grants given for research into how hip conditions like labral tears or femoral acetabular impingement, which is another hip diagnosis, actually have a massive pelvic health component. And treatment from a pelvic health physical therapist can actually be really, really beneficial to this patient population. And so that kind of got me interested in pelvic health. And then I had my own birth experience. And so that's kind of what brought me to shifting gears a little bit and now blending the two, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was crucial. It was the biggest part because a lot of the exercises that I was doing in PT, like clamshells and like all these like abductor type of things were not working for me and were causing a lot more pain, but I couldn't explain it. I was just like, my hip, I have a dull pain sometimes.
All the time. That never really goes away and is sometimes worse. And when I stand up, it's almost like the one common thing that people I feel like tell me is like, when I stand up from sitting from a long period of time, I get this really bad pinch and I feel like I can't stand up straight all the way for a little bit. And I feel like I'm stuck. Yeah. Kind of like you were saying, like, I feel like I'm stuck bent over.
So can you talk a little bit about, or what I really want to talk about today is like, is you are an avid weightlifter and I love lifting weights and the gym is very important to me. And so that was, I never really stopped working out during this. I obviously changed what I was doing, but I did have people say that you shouldn't, maybe your body just shouldn't be lifting weights or maybe you shouldn't be doing these things. And it's like, but I was running a business, you know, that was very physical. And I have to like bend down.
It's funny you ask that because I just did like a series of reels on Instagram.
I saw that.
Talk about that, right? Like, I like CrossFit and weightlifting, but that doesn't mean everybody has to do that. But there's a lot of talk out there, even amongst medical professionals who don't necessarily do weight training or strength training or CrossFit or things like that, that, oh, you just, certain diagnoses just shouldn't squat anymore or shouldn't deadlift or shouldn't lift weights. And I vehemently disagree with that. I think squatting is in function. Deadlifting is in function, right? Like, how many times at work did you have to pick up, you know, heavy, like supplies that were heavy, you know? I mean, and what are you supposed to do? Just quit working or quit living your life just because you have pain? I certainly think that modification is important. So, you know, if you have a patient, like, for example, you, we modified things for a little while. We didn't totally take you out of weightlifting, but we sort of looked at what works for your body, what doesn't work for your body. How can we sort of mimic this same movement or strengthen this same muscle group without doing a movement that causes pain? And so I think that's the key, really, is that, you know, I try to, I don't know, I guess it's a very a soapbox that I'm passionate about, but I feel like health professionals and medical professionals really need to make it a point to understand what their patients want to do, not only what they want to do, but what they are currently doing. You know, for example, are you going to tell a mom of a toddler, oh, well, yeah, I don't think you should go to the gym and I don't want you lifting anything over 5 pounds. Well, what is she supposed to do with her toddler who weighs 40 pounds?
Yeah.
There's only so many ways you can pick up a toddler. Some of that's going to have to involve squatting and deadlifting, the same sort of motion that is involved in that lift. So I really think it's important to talk to your patient, understand what they want to do, what they need to do, understand the movements that bother them. And that might mean getting on the floor with them or getting, you know, doing those movements with them. And then find ways where you can modify and then eventually progress back to that movement. You know, just because you're not able to do that movement today doesn't mean you can't do that movement 2 or 3 weeks from now if we appropriately modify in the meantime and work our way up to that.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. And I think that not only is important for them from a physical standpoint, but from a mental and emotional standpoint, right? Like, imagine how disheartening it feels as a patient to go and have a healthcare provider tell you, well, you just can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And imagine then if that's your job, what are you supposed to do, right? Like, quit your career, quit your job. I think it can be very disheartening and very discouraging. So I think having realistic conversations with your patients and saying, look, we might have to change some things for a while. You might have to scale back a little bit, but my goal is to work with you and figure out what works for your body right now. And then we'll gradually progress back to doing everything that you want to do. And usually you get better buy-in from your patients that way too. The patients are more motivated to, you know, get involved in the care plan and do their home exercise program or come to therapy. So I think it's hugely important. And I also think from a, you asked specifically about strength training. I think from a strength training standpoint, I mean, my gosh, the benefits are countless. You know, I mean, it helps with, I know particularly us for women, we have to worry about things like decreased bone density as we age, hormonal changes, drops in estrogen and testosterone as we age that can decrease muscle mass, decrease bone density, decrease libido, decrease mood. I mean, there are so many things that weight training and strength training can do for women beneficially that I feel like that is a vital part of being a woman. Some form of strength training is a vital part of being a woman. And there's research to back that up too. So, I mean, I, as you know, because we've had many discussions about it, I'm very passionate about that. I feel like I don't think osteoporosis would be as rampant in older women if we strength trained more. I think that more women may potentially be able to manage going through menopause with less hormone therapy if they had strength training and other things like that in their lives. So yes, I think that's hugely important.
Yeah. And just like as a sense of community, like I've been going to the same gym for 10 years and mm-hmm. I meet the same people and, you know, like that's an important part of my day. And
yes,
even if I could only do a small amount of things and, you know, and a lot of times like half my workout was like meditation or sitting in different spots or like small things, but that was a huge piece of like going through all that pain, but also being able to go to the places that make me feel good, even if I couldn't do all of this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And where you feel mentally and emotionally, I mean, that carries over to how you're healing physically. If you feel completely depleted mentally and emotionally, it's going to be hard for you to physically feel better. So I tell people that all the time. I say, will it help you if I let you go back to your gym, even if you're just doing mobility work or even if you're just doing body weight only exercises? And the response is always, absolutely, yes. I will be super careful. I would do whatever. I will modify however you want me to modify. I just want to go back to my gym because those are my people. Yeah. So yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit? I didn't know anything about pelvic floor health or PT before. I literally made an appointment and didn't know what I was going for. So because I was like, it was at a point where I was just like threw everything against the wall to try to get out of pain. Can you just talk about what is the pelvic floor? Like, do we mean when we're talking about that? And why is it so important to like have an awareness?
Yeah. So that's a great question. The pelvic floor is a musculoskeletal system that is at the base of your trunk. So it is comprised of muscles, ligaments, tendons, bony structure, glands, all kinds of things. The pelvic floor is responsible for sexual function, bowel function, bladder function, and for postural support of your skeleton. So I feel like other professionals, like take OBGYNs, for example, or urologists or colorectal specialists, they are looking at the pelvic floor as more of an organ system, if you will. So they're looking at sort of organ function, like reproductive function of your uterus or your bladder or your bowel. Physical therapists, pelvic floor physical therapists are looking at the whole entire system as a musculoskeletal system and how all of that intertwines. So for example, with your labral tear, a lot of times on the side that the labral tear is, or even sometimes on the other side, so we'll just go in general, the labrum of the hip is very, very, very deep in the joint. The pelvic floor is basically on the very opposite side of the pelvic bone from that structure. So when you have hip instability or a labral tear or things like that, a lot of times you can get tension of the muscles in the pelvic floor or even potentially weakness in the muscles of the pelvic floor if they're not able to function properly. So let's say you come in with hip pain and you're seeing an orthopedic physical therapist and you're complaining of hip pain, and maybe you also have urinary leakage with certain movements, but you don't put two and two together at all, because why would you, right? Like, most people feel like those two things have nothing to do with one another, but in fact, they 100% have everything to do with one another, because function of the muscles of the pelvic floor are going to help control function of your bladder. So in other words, it's going to help you make sure that you can hold urine when you want to hold urine, release urine when you want to release urine, hold fecal matter when you want to hold it, release it when you want to release it, things of that nature. So that's what I love about being able to sort of blend both orthopedics and pelvic health, is that I'm really looking at the pelvic floor as a musculoskeletal system as a whole. So what does that look like for me during evaluation? I think of it as layers of an onion, right? So you've got your external tissues. So the muscles and connective tissues of your lower abdomen, the muscles and connective tissues of your inner thighs, your buttock region. I look at all that first. I see if there's any tension there, if there's any scar tissue there, maybe from previous surgeries, like, you know, if people have had appendectomies or gallbladder surgery or cesarean or something like that. So I'm looking for scar tissue that might affect that function. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the superficial layer of the pelvic floor, which on a woman, the superficial layer of the pelvic floor is going to be right there at the vaginal opening. So that's that really superficial layer of muscles that's going to control opening and closing of the urethra and the rectum. And then that's also the layer that's responsible for orgasm, arousal, lubrication to the tissues, things like that. In the man or male patients, the superficial layer of the pelvic floor is going to be the penile shaft. So, you know, again, urinary function, opening and closing of the urethra, opening and closing of the rectum, sexual function. And then that deeper layer of the pelvic floor is going to be a little bit deeper in. So that would be more like when you think of a gynecological exam, when they're, you know, looking deeper into the tissues. Now, we're not using a speculum, so it's very different than an OBGYN sort of evaluation or a urology evaluation. We're not in stirrups. We don't have a speculum, anything like that. But that deeper layer of the pelvic floor is going to be that postural layer that kind of sits at the base of your skeleton and kind of holds everything in. So that's going to hold in our bladder, our rectum, our uterus, our intestines, all of that stuff. And then from a muscular, a bony standpoint, that's going to support our pelvis. It's going to support our pelvis as it relates to hip function, as it relates to lower spine function, all of that kind of stuff. So it's actually way more involved than I think most people.
Yeah. I never would have thought that that was something, like, I'd gone to PT for so many years because of all different kinds of issues and around my hips. And I never even thought that was never brought up. And I had never thought about it before.
Yep.
And there could have been some, or at least consequences in other parts of that whole area as you're sitting there.
Absolutely. You're not alone.
Yeah.
Most people don't realize the connection.
Yeah. Can you maybe talk about, so like if you're doing a squat or a deadlift or you're picking something up or you're picking your groceries up from the floor or something like that, could you give us like how, obviously you want everyone's like, oh, tighten your core to not hurt your back to do this. But what mm-hmm. does it really mean? Like, what is that? How is protecting your back or your hips when you're picking something heavy off the ground? What does that really do?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things it does. And actually, so there are multiple layers of the core. The more superficial layer is going to be like your six pack abs, right? And those are going to be more like power muscles. So we're going to use our six pack abs when we need some sort of rapid maximal lift, right? So if you do a sit up really fast or something of that nature. The deeper layer of the core, the deepest layer, is called your transverse abdominis. And that's more, think of like a corset. That's more like your body's internal corset. So that's going to be not as strong as the rectus or the six pack abs, but it's meant to work for a long period of time. So it's a postural muscle. So it's meant to kind of stabilize things throughout day-to-day function. So it has better endurance than the rectus does, but it's not quite as strong, if that makes sense. So the beautiful thing about our bodies is that they're kind of made to handle whatever life throws at us. So the bracing of your core to protect your back does a few things. The first thing it does is it creates a little bit of pressure in your abdomen, which makes your trunk more rigid. So the thought process is that a rigid trunk is a more stable trunk. So then if you go to lift something, it's less likely to collapse, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
The second way that activating your core helps for your back is that we have in our bodies what's called muscular slings. So there's muscular slings in the front of our body, which are comprised by those abdominal muscles that I mentioned earlier, and then also our obliques, which are the muscles on this kind of the, more the side of your body. And then in the back, that's going to be comprised of like our lats, the postural muscles, our erector spinae, which are the postural muscles of our back, our multifidus, which is another muscle in our back, and then our glutes. And basically what these slings do, they kind of make like a crisscross pattern across your body. And when they're activated appropriately, they make what's called a force closure of our skeleton. So in other words, it would be like the same that a corset does. It literally, the activation of those muscle groups at the appropriate time creates almost like a corset for your pelvis and your skeleton. So again, making a rigid trunk. So as you go to lift or pick something up or do whatever function you want to do, it stabilizes the spine. Now, interestingly enough, there was research done that looked at people with, you know, back pain or a history of back injury versus people who have never hurt their back or don't have back pain to determine how their pressure in their abdomen was different. And they actually found that people who have back pain have sort of a more dysfunctional lifting pattern when they lift. So they do more of a puffing out of their breath to create significant amount of intra-abdominal pressure. So when you see people like, yeah, like really holding their breath and kind of grunting and things like that, they're trying to create even more pressure in their abdomen using their breath, right, versus using those muscular slings or those deeper postural layers to create support. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah, because sometimes you'll, if you're not thinking about it, I think this is what I was doing when I was lifting weights is too, is like holding your breath, but and making your stomach kind of go out a little bit more.
Yes.
Now what I do is I exhale deeply.
Perfect.
Lifting. And then that like zips everything up.
Yes. And that's exactly what I try to teach my patients. And so what you're doing there by the exhale and zipping up, as you mentioned, is when we, so if we can think of, let me see if I can like position my phone so that you can see what I'm doing. So if, sorry, I'm in workout clothes. If we think of our abdomen like a Coke can, right?
Yeah.
I've got the sides, the bottom, and the top. When we inhale, it puffs out, yeah, right? When we exhale, it draws in. Mm-hmm. So what's happening there is when we inhale, our diaphragm is dropping down, our pelvic floor is dropping down, and we're increasing pressure in the abdomen. When we exhale, the diaphragm is drawing up and in, the pelvic floor is drawing up and in, and we're sort of creating anatomical stability, if that makes sense. So one uses pressure stability and one uses anatomical stability. So when people, weightlifters, for example, or if you see people lifting stuff that's very, very heavy and they're not accustomed to it, a lot of times it'll look like this.
Yeah.
Right? It's a big inhale and an immediate breath hold. So yeah, they're trying to maximize this increased pressure in the abdomen. The problem with that is that it's not utilizing our body's innate anatomical structures to create support. It also puts the muscles and the tissues of the pelvic floor at a disadvantage because now we've got all this pressure bearing down against them as we're going through this movement.
Right.
It's less problematic for men just because anatomically how their pelvic floors are made. Their pelvises are more narrow than ours, and they're, from a bony standpoint, are more kind of rigid and stable than ours. Our pelvises are a little bit wider and less stable for childbearing.
Yeah.
And so our pelvic outlet is wider. Ours is more like, you know, oval shape. Theirs is more like true circle.
Right.
So our pelvic floor is a little bit at a disadvantage because there's less bony support there. So then when we add all this pressure,
yeah,
it can be not great for our pelvic floor tissues. So
we have a lot of mobility throughout our cycle too, right? Like our tendons and stuff are moving throughout.
Depending on where we are in our cycle. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So what I try to teach my patients is that a breath hold is okay. I don't want to say that a breath hold is terrible and that you should never breath hold. With certain things in life, a breath hold is unavoidable. So if you're a weightlifter or strength training and you're training at 80 to 85, 90% of your max, mm-hmm. a breath hold is inevitable. Same thing if you're at work or at home or something and you need to lift a big heavy piece of furniture, the breath hold is inevitable. What I feel like is helpful is instead of breathing in first and then bracing, you can take a deep breath in, exhale, then breath hold through the most challenging part. So for example, I have pelvic organ prolapse, which for those who don't know, it's like the layman's term is like your insides are falling out. But basically what's happened is because of childbirth, my tissues have gotten weaker and they don't manage pressure as well. So I can't inhale, breath hold, do a heavy squat and come up, or I'm going to feel all these symptoms. So what I do, squat is my most challenging movement and I have the most difficult time like coming up from the bottom. So initiating that movement, coming up from the bottom. So I inhale. There's like a little bitty portion in there where I'm breath holding right in the most challenging portion of the lift for me. And then I'm exhaling again. Now, for somebody who's got really significant hip or low back pain, or maybe they have some pelvic floor dysfunction and they're just starting their physical therapy journey, for those patients, I would have them exhale through the whole entire movement and basically modify their weight to where they're low enough in weight and their percentages of their weight that they don't have to breath hold at the very beginning, right? Like I want them to get more comfortable with managing their pressure, and then we can start ramping back up to weights that are a little bit more challenging. But so that using that exhale, like you were talking about, is really what kind of activates our deeper postural muscles and those myofascial slings to sort of create activate our body's own inert corset, if you will. And that's what supports our spine.
Yeah. I think for me, that was definitely a game changer because I was like, cause then this is not technical at all. I felt so floppy when I was because I wasn't exhaling in the correct place in order to lift weight in order to increase the weight that I could lift, but also just
the
way. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I feel like a lot of my initial appointments with therapists are with patients are actually teaching that education on breathing mechanics and let's figure out a way that you can manage your pressure well enough that you're not having symptoms and you're also able to sort of gradually improve your function.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then can you talk a little bit about, we mentioned a little bit about our cycle and women's cycle and how, like, what does one, if you can just do a very basic, like, what are the parts of our cycle? What is happening in each of these parts? And then I just want to talk about like, when is the, like, what does it look like to work out throughout our cycle?
Yeah. So it's interesting you bring this up because I've actually very recently become very fascinated by this. I have a naturopath that I work with that I was having some other period related challenges. And so we went through a whole session of her just basically going over this with me and teaching me how to start tracking my cycle. And I have noticed a huge change, not only from a working out standpoint, but and you can appreciate this too as a business owner, but from an entrepreneurial standpoint, in terms of when I try to create my content, when I try to wrap up projects, when I try to start projects, things like that. So it really can be a game changer for women, both physically and professionally. So if it's physical training, that's great. If it's owning your own business or starting a project you're wanting to do. So basically we have four phases of our cycle. Days 1 through 7, typically everybody's a little bit different on this, but days 1 through 7 are typically menses, or when we're menstruating. During that time, we're very intuitive. It's a great time to brainstorm. A lot of times your brain will be like rapid firing ideas or creativity. So it's not necessarily a good time to wrap up projects or finish projects, but it's a great time to sort of brainstorm about how you want to do this project or where you want to start or things like that. It is also, believe it or not, the best time to handle physical strain.
Really?
Which seems so counterintuitive, but our bodies handle, like our central nervous system, for example, handles strain better when we're on our period. Maybe not necessarily day one, or even maybe like day one or two, but as you progress. And I've noticed this with myself. I'm able to lift heavier weights. I tolerate cardiovascular strain better. If I'm trying to max out a workout or something like that, I try to plan it around when I'm on my period. I used to hate my period, and now I'm like, man, I can't wait till I'm on my period because I'm gonna get so much done. But yes, so that is actually a good time for, if you're gonna lift heavier then. If you're gonna really hit the ground running with a workout that's gonna be cardio intensive or central nervous system intensive, it's a great time to do that. Wow. Days 8 through 14 are the follicular phase. So that is also a time where ideas are sort of continuing to flow, and you can kind of, rather than brainstorm, you can kind of start to fine tune more of these ideas and kind of put pen to paper and say, okay, like, this is what I'm going to do for this. This is what I'm going to do for this. This is what I'm going to do for this. Great time to start new projects. This time is also good for high intensity exercise. So if you're going to run a marathon, or if you're going to do an exercise that's like very cardiovascular intensive, this is a great time to do that. Days 15 through 22 are the ovulation phase. So a lot of times during this phase, we have a lot of energy. We have high energy. We feel really good. We're great at communicating during this phase of our cycle. So this is also a good time to continue those high intensity workouts. And this is also a good time to continue working on some of those projects that you might have started the week or two before. So we're still kind of in those like 2 to 3 weeks, first 2 to 3 weeks of the period or of your cycle. Luteal phase, which is days 23 through 30, are, I don't know what to call it. Nature's like shitstorm, I guess. I don't know. That's the time when you're going to feel the most fatigued. If you're somebody who has a lot of mood fluctuations during your cycle, that's probably the time you're going to feel the saddest or the most lonely, or maybe you don't really want to be around people. You want to stay kind of more to yourself, introverted. This is when you need to sort of slow down your workouts. So decrease the stress in your central nervous system, maybe decrease the weights. If you notice yourself not hitting weights that you were previously able to hit during this phase of your cycle, that's normal. During this phase, you have less energy. It's not a good time to start new projects, but it's a great time to wrap up old projects, like just mindless stuff where you're just sort of checking boxes and wrapping things up. And it's also a good time to modify any sort of high intensity exercise. So interestingly enough, there's a PhD researcher, her name is Stacy Sims, S-T-A-C-Y-S-I-M-S. She is doing a ton of research on this right now, specifically as to how it pertains to athletic training, both for performance and recovery. She's got a lot of great information. She has a podcast called Women Are Not Small Men. She has a book called Women Are Not Small Men, and she has another book called Roar, which talks about just, for example, little things like, I didn't even know this, but women sweat slower than men. So we don't tolerate training in locations that have high humidity or high heat as well as men do.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating. There's some interesting studies with altitude also, but then she also goes into significant detail as to how your hormones affect your training. And to me, I always thought, well, while you're on your period, that seems like it would affect you more than while you're ovulating, because, you know, people always say that, you know, ovulation is fertility and that's when you're, you know, it's like when you're at your most vital time and all these things, but it makes sense when you listen to Dr. Sims. She talks about how there's so much going on in the ovulation phase and sort of immediately post-ovulation, which is that luteal phase. So the luteal phase is like the last week or two before your period, before you start your period. So you've already ovulated and you're about to start your period. So you're basically getting this massive hormone dump. And the way she explained it is that ovulation is an inflammatory process of your body because this egg is being released and then your body is like ramping up all these hormones to make an appropriate place for the egg to then rest and all this kind of stuff. So she's like, think of the luteal phase as an inflammatory phase for your body. So similarly, as it would be if you were injured or things like that, your body is just expending so much energy managing that inflammation that it doesn't have the added energy for physical exertion is kind of the way she explains it.
Yeah.
And I don't remember, I forgot to take notes on this part and I don't remember exactly, but her podcast and her books both talk about this. You can also change how you eat at those different times in your cycle. And I don't remember if it's luteal phase or follicular phase, but at one point, we're better at pulling nutrients from our body. So in other words, we can access our glycogen stores better. And so we need more carbohydrates to replenish those glycogen stores that we're taking, right? The other phase, and I forget which one, you guys will have to reference the book, but we're not as good at sort of taking those glycogen stores. So we need less carbohydrates and more fats.
Yeah.
So that's interesting too, because the times that I have remembered to go back and reference that and look that up and eat accordingly, I have felt like I recovered better from physical strain, but also my PMS symptoms were not nearly as bad. Like the cramping was not as bad. The moodiness was not as bad. Even the heaviness of my flow was different. So I think it's interesting, you know, I don't know how your listeners feel, but I don't really feel like anybody taught me that growing up. I feel like my period was just my period. And it's like, oh, when you're on your period, it's going to suck. And
yeah,
the rest of the time, just go about your life, you know? Similarly too, and I wanted to mention this, if you're someone who is having hormonal challenges, or maybe you're having weird things going on and your physician wants to check your hormones, because we have such a consistent fluctuation in our hormones all throughout our cycle, it's really important in order to get a true picture of what's going on hormonally, you need to check hormones at each phase of the cycle. So that would mean you need to check hormones 4 times throughout the month to get a true picture of what's happening.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that part of the day 8 through 14, that's the follicle
system. Follicular phase, yeah.
And that's when you have a follicle in your ovary that
is about to be released.
It's about to be released. And then it's traveling down to your uterus, and the egg then is in the uterus. Or if it does, if it goes to
So follicular phase would be when it's in the follicle, and then ovulation phase is when it's like out of the follicle and then potentially implanting in the uterus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there is a lot going on at that time.
There's a lot going on at that time.
And then your hormones are basically flip-flopping during that time.
Yes. Well. So I think I'm going to say this right, and y'all might want to check me on this, but I believe our progesterone really spikes during ovulation phase.
Just after ovulation.
Yeah. So just after ovulation. Yeah. So that has a huge effect on stuff too. So like, for example, since we're sharing, the whole reason that I started working with this naturopath is because for years now, I had been having this weird mid-cycle spotting. My periods were awful. I mean, like super, super heavy. I was having horrible back pain, horrible cramps. My PMS was like, I mean, I was ragey, like very ragey. And that had never been my experience in the past. That didn't start until after my second was born. And I had had my PCP and my OB check my hormones, but they had only checked it once. They didn't check it at like various times in my cycle.
Right.
And so the naturopath checked my hormones at various different times and found that my progesterone was low throughout the whole entire cycle.
Oh, right.
And so she ended up putting me on like a natural, it wasn't a progesterone supplement because it's not progesterone, but it is a naturally occurring herb that mimics progesterone. It's called Vitex. And I only took it for a couple months and I only took it at certain times. Like, you know, I think for the first days 0 to 15, I took one capsule, and then days 15 to 30, I took two. And now I have none of those symptoms that I was having before. Mm. So, you know, I mean, I think even too, I think that's another beautiful thing about starting to track your cycle is that it can also give you insight as to how you're feeling and do you need to see somebody to get checked out. You know, if you start tracking your cycle and you're not experiencing some of the changes that you're supposed to be experiencing naturally, then that can be a sign to you like, okay, maybe I need to go see somebody and have my hormones checked, or maybe I need to potentially start tracking more. It can be great for people too who maybe are unable to use various different forms of birth control and just want to know more options for like tracking and either helping get pregnant or preventing pregnancy. So, you know, certainly there are options like birth control or IUDs or things like that, but there are some people who can't tolerate those things. And so, I think it can be just a great way to have more body autonomy, understand your body better, and just kind of feel better overall, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because you're all over. I think that title, Women Are Not Small Men, is such a good title because in studies and medicine, like, women are not the de facto of study.
No. Like, no, she actually says in an interview, she says the whole reason she got into this PhD research is because she rode crew at a university in New Zealand, and their whole entire training program was based off the men's training program.
Right.
They just did lighter weights or, you know, slower road paces or things like that. And she said, I started noticing my teammates and I would just tank at certain times in our cycle. And so it got me thinking, this has got to be different. She goes, so I started looking at all the research, and all the research that had been done on recovery or training schedules was done on men and extrapolated to women. And she said, but that doesn't work because physiologically, anatomically, hormonally, we are completely different than men. Yeah. And you have to take into account our menstrual cycle because it affects us through a huge portion of our lifespan, right? Yeah. Like, you know, from early teenage years to potentially, you know, 60s, 50s, 60s for some women. Yeah. So she said to just completely pretend like that doesn't exist for that massive chunk of a lifespan is wrong. And so she started doing all of her research because of that. So,
it's so key.
And
just like when you think about like lifting weights too, like we have really strong legs, you know, and like, just like comparatively, you know, in a ratio, like size-wise, like compared to men a lot of times.
She talks about that in her book.
Yeah. I always think about that. I was like, I could do a leg workout all the time, like a ton of weight, and it like not matter at all. But
yeah,
you know, some arm stuff, I'm just like, oh, I cannot.
Yeah, she talks about that a lot. And she also talks about how typically men are better at explosive movements or like power movements. And when they've done research on actual muscle fibers, like when they've actually done biopsy research on muscle fibers of men and women, they've found that men have more fast twitch fibers, which are better for fast explosive movements, and women have more slow twitch fibers. So we're going to be better at, if you compare, you know, men to women and, you know, look at body size and all these different things, we're typically going to handle endurance sports better than a man. And they'll typically handle power or explosive sports better than a woman. And you know, that's not to say that there aren't men who are excellent endurance athletes and there aren't women who are excellent strength athletes. It's just, if you look at our anatomy, that's just what we handle a bit better.
Yeah. Generally. So interesting. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This was really fascinating. Oh, and there was one other question that I meant to ask in the very beginning is, what are some of the things that people would go to a PT for, right? Like, if what are like just some of like the typical things that you'd be like, oh, this is actually a physical therapist thing that I should talk to someone about?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Physical therapy itself has a ton of different subspecialties. So there's neuro, there's orthopedics, there's pediatrics, there's pelvic health. So, you know, from my standpoint, for what I do for orthopedics and pelvic health, I'll take the pelvic health realm first. If you are having pain with intercourse, if you are having urinary difficulty, and I mean leaking on yourself, peeing multiple times a day, just to give y'all an idea, normal pee schedule, if you will, is every 2 to 4 hours. So if you're somebody who's like urinating multiple times an hour, that's a dysfunction. So if that's, if you're having constipation, if you're having pain with bowel function, if you're having, you know, weird abdominal or hip pain that you're really kind of not sure what's up and you've seen multiple other care providers and they can't figure out what's up. Same thing with back pain. If you're having weird back pain that you've treated from an orthopedic physical therapist that's not improving, those would all be great things for a pelvic floor physical therapist. Also, what you can do is, we get a lot of patients for childbirth prep, actually. So if you are pregnant, there's a lot we can teach you about breath work and how to breathe while you're pushing and how to breathe during labor to sort of put less stress on your tissues, but still get really effective pushing. And then obviously postpartum, we see women to address diastasis recti, healing of their cesarean scar, if they have prolapse, if they have, you know, if they tore in their perineal area during delivery. So all of those types of things. From an orthopedic standpoint, I mean, head to toe, you got neck pain, you got shoulder pain, you got low back pain, you got hip pain. I mean, we kind of pretty much can handle anything. What I love about orthopedics is that I think most physical therapists, especially those in orthopedics, are very function minded.
Yeah.
So our goal is to get you back to your function. So we do a lot of functional assessment of like looking at, okay, how are you squatting? What's happening up and down your kinetic chain while you're squatting that may be causing your pain? And the beautiful thing is that we no longer, in the state of Louisiana and several other states, we no longer need a referral from a physician. So let's say you're playing weekend soccer and you twist your ankle, and you can get in to see a physical therapist, but you can't get in to see a physician until 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
You can go see the physical therapist, and they might save you from getting an x-ray or an MRI or something that you don't necessarily need, but it's kind of the way the traditional medical system goes, right? It's like, oh, well, let's do an x-ray. Okay, nothing's broken. Let's send you to the doctor. You see the doctor, they send you to physical therapy. So it's like, the beautiful thing about not needing referrals anymore is that we can see you 2 days post-injury versus waiting a month post-injury to see you. And that really a lot of healing occurs in that period of time. So by being able to get y'all in sooner, we're able to really like hit the ground running.
Oh no, She just got disconnected. Oh, man. Okay. Well, we will see what happens. She'll come back on. We'll cut this piece.
Oh. I'm sorry. My phone rang and I tried to ignore the call and it hung up on it. Sorry.
Okay, no worries. We'll cut it.
So I should have turned my Do Not Disturb on, but I didn't think about that. So basically being able to get y'all in right away is helpful in the sense of we can really hit the ground running to get you better and get you back to your desired function versus waiting several weeks.
Yeah, that was the key for me because that happened right. That was like, I think 2015 or 2016 mm-hmm. or something like that. And I had been seeing my pain specialist at Ochsner and I was like, hey, none of the PT work that I've done over the last like 6 or 7 years has really worked. Do you know a mm-hmm. very specific person who can do these things? I had been tracked, mm-hmm. figuring out for so time. And she was like, no. And then that law changed actually. And I was able to do it on my own. And so, and
search great.
Who I needed. Yeah. It made a big difference.
Yeah.
Not just for like an acute injury, but like if you had been
right. Yeah. Yeah. And I always tell people that like, y'all are your best advocates. Patients are their best advocates and you know your body best. You're living with your body day in and day out. And so most of the time patients know what they need, right? So for y'all to be able to say, I want to go to this provider and then you can is great.
Yeah. Yeah. That was crucial for me. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of people. Well, thank you so much, Emily. I love talking to you.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I feel so honored.
Yeah. It was really fun. I love this. I mean, we talk about this when we're in sessions.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much.
Yeah. Okay. I will see. We'll probably cut that little piece out.
Anyway. Yeah, my bad.
It was pretty fast, so it may.
I was like, whoa, let me get back.
Yeah, thank you. I still feel really good. So everything.
Hey, look, I was telling somebody the other day, I'm like, maybe it's bad for business, but like, I love it when patients don't need me. Like I shouldn't feel that way because I'm trying to make a living off like being a therapist, but like,
yeah.
I love nothing more than when a patient's like, I'm still feeling good. I don't think I need to come. I'm like, okay, great.
I know, yeah.
I'm here when you need me, but like, that's great if you don't need me.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much. So we, I haven't done the lineup just yet, like figured out how it's going. But since you do still, this episode needs a little editing, it'd probably be towards the end. So,
Okay. But perfect.
I will send out a schedule and basically I'll like tell you the date that yours comes
okay.
out. And it's every Tuesday. So
okay.
it's a Tuesday.
And it was to listen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. This is awesome. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, I'm proud of you.
Thanks.
With all your projects. Keep going.
Thank you. You too. That's all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Making Good. You can find our podcast on all the platforms you find your favorite podcasts. You can also find a transcript of this episode and all of our episodes on our website, churchalley.store. If you loved this episode, please share it and let others know about the good work of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery. Thanks again for listening to Making Good. I hope you have a really good day. We'll see you next time.